Welcome back, listeners. As a reminder, we left off right after talking to Judy, Emma, and Mandy about the Oak Savannah, iTech, and even got to hear some stories at the Oak Savannah from partners. In the second half of this episode, you'll hear a new voice come in and explore what is at the intersection of iTech and architecture. You might also hear the names Sergio Pellaroni, Eric Giovanetti, Travis Bell, who are very important partners in the Center for Public Interest Design at Portland State University School of Architecture, which you'll hear more about in the second episode of this series. But without further ado, let's get back to where we left off. Over this span of 6 months, I had many conversations with folks at the Oak Savannah, attended meetings, and participated in the seasonal events hosted. And it didn't take long to see that relationships are at the center of all the happenings at the Oak Savannah. And in the spirit of bringing folks together, what might have stemmed from two people with two varying perspectives yet shared a common vision, another relationship blossomed in the grounds of the Oak Savannah, a relationship between the Indigenous Nation Studies and the School of Architecture at PSU, and together take part in the transformation of the Oak Savannah, and particularly the revisioning of the iTech Center.
It's a wonderful story of dreams and vision and excitement coming together here on the Oak Savannah before we knew there was going to be an iTech Center. Years ago, Sergio had reached out to me about some work he was doing with a tribal community in Montana and looking at kind of addressing food sovereignty and creating a large kitchen and a place to store culturally significant plants. And it was like, oh, we're trying to do something like that. That's what we're doing here in the urban center. And so that was when I first realized that Sergio, as we continued to visit, had done and was doing a lot of work with Indigenous communities, both in what's called the United States today, but also around the world. And so before the pandemic, Sergio graciously agreed to come over and walk the land. And my colleagues and students at the time, Savannah Jackson and Sequoia Breck, we as Oak Savannah people and doing lots of projects together way before it became an iTech certificate, we met Sergio here just to tour what was called the Harrison Street building and kind of like, what's the weight-bearing walls? Could we break out this wall? Could we add a bigger kitchen? And it was so exciting to have an expert walk through and say, oh yeah, you could, here's your weight-bearing wall, the potential here. And I think he got excited at that time too. And as he learned more about what we were imagining and what students had asked for from the very beginning, which was sanctuary in the city and a place to gather and make medicine, have tea, have classes indoor or outdoor. This gives us that flexibility. And we really took it deeper and we began to look at opportunities for me to come to his architecture studios.
And from this point on, this would kick off many more collaborations, from community projects like the Willow Domes, to co-designing festival stages, to sharing courses across these two departments.
What we did was the studios with the architecture undergraduate program. And they put together an incredible illustrated book of their designs and their narrative. And the following year, I got to work with the graduate students in the School of Architecture, and that's where I met Eric Giovanetti and many other students that we're working with now, like Ethan and Sam and Arden. There was a second booklet that came out, all color, with their designs and their narrative. And what was exciting was we began the collaboration of what is an Indigenous perspective? What is a relational worldview? What are Indigenous values and principles that guide all aspects of living? And so being invited to the studio and sharing with the students, we had conversations about the role of the changing seasons, the significance of the four directions, and the significance of water and sun and the land and the air movement and the relationship to our plant relatives, animal relatives, who's already living here, what is the land telling us it's becoming, how do we take an urban site and recognize the Oak Savannah and Camas Prairie that's hiding underneath. And so those conversations were exciting to see come to life in these booklets that CPID and the School of Architecture put together.
As Judy and I kept talking, one story really stood out. You see, institutions historically haven't really been the most welcoming places for our Indigenous and many other BIPOC communities for a lot of reasons. But there was one unexpected ally at PSU who really understood and listened to the visions.
I want to acknowledge that it was our former president, Steve Percy, who, looking at resiliency in the city, Sergio invited me to join the president and a committee that was talking about safety, security, resiliency on campus. And when we came to the Oak Savannah and I spoke about the work we had been doing and what it meant to us, at that moment I feel like President Steve Percy, what he shared was, he felt that, he got it, he heard that. And before he retired, he did what you need to do, and only the president could do it, was to make this the ITEC Center, the Indigenous Traditional Ecological and Cultural Knowledge Center. And so it's no longer the Harrison Street building. Someone said, all the Google Maps are changed. And so it became very real through those relationships.
Before we go on further, we're going to go on a little bit of a segue here, but an important one. In an earlier conversation I had with Athena on a recent presentation she did at the 2023 NOMA conference on decolonizing Pacific Northwest architecture, over the many things we discuss, there is one very clear point made. Architecture holds up colonial legacies and practices through the act of building. So I figured we ought to have a conversation about this first, and Athena shares with us her perspectives on this.
I'd always really loved the built environment and design. Early on, I loved it as a kid. I loved making forts and just crafting things and being in the backyard and just trying to put shelters together for me and my friends. But to me, an architect was a rich white man, and that was not me. But I went after it, super excited, and I feel like I started with so much excitement and, you know, that I had allowed myself to even begin the journey. And then I got into the program and suddenly a lot of the pedagogy began to really show itself in a way where I still didn't see myself reflected in it whatsoever, even though I'm learning from an institution that is built on my homelands. That was not a part of the conversation. It was not a part of the education. What was evident was that it was very Eurocentric, and it was still kind of an old boys club. So my initial stereotype was actually quite accurate in the way that these systems have sort of perpetuated that. So I did, you know, like that stereotype is real in a way, but now we're challenging that by showing up and getting through. But it also takes a lot to get through as a BIPOC person, as an Indigenous woman, when you're not reflected and you're not valued, really. It doesn't feel like our knowledge isn't valued the way that other cultures' knowledge is valued. The Western knowledge is the most valued, and that's the most taught. I had the opportunity to understand what it is to be a res native and an urban native, which is two totally different realities. And for me, the land is our church. It's our relation. So when I think about really sacred sites or places that my ancestors have had and marked as really important sites or really important areas, or and they're sacred and have a lot of meaning, and then suddenly there's industry built right on top of it, it feels a lot like if someone were to remove a church and build a factory instead. So it's really heartbreaking. And the built environment, without any consent or without any informative lens on where these sites are sacred to us, they just build anyway, you know. So there's sort of like a really damaging position where we feel and we see how our land has transformed in such a negative way over just such a short fraction of time, where there was so much care and intention and making of space for thousands of years. And my ancestors have been buried here for thousands of years. Like, we are the soil, and we are the trees, we are the water. And so then to just be kind of brushed off to a reservation and that's it, and has its own kind of traumatic history, but it's also been a place of where we have our resilience and we have our community, which is really beautiful. It does come with its own set of challenges, and but still, when especially I think within a urban environment, it's still really important to understand how the land is still speaking to us, and there are still these areas that are sacred and like want to be, that we have made a promise, really. We've made a promise to our Salmon Nation, we've made a promise to our rivers, our water, we've made a promise to the land itself, to be in good relation, and we're not. We're not making that, we're not holding up our promise because we don't, we're, there's so few.
This might seem a little bit of a dichotomy, but how does the intersection of iTech into architecture beginning to disrupt what you just talked about? And what are some of the outcomes you've seen come out of that intersection?
It has been a really incredible process to be a part of. It's what's kept me going in the program. I did take a year off after my first year and worked exclusively within the iTech realm and was able to really sort of like build my spirit up in a way to then come back and do the 2 years that I needed to finish the degree. And so to me now, the bridging of architecture and iTech has been really amazing to see how we can do things in community and how we can change the way that sort of the older methodologies have been of positioning, you know, one person as the designer and they get the recognition and it's for that one person rather than really valuing how many minds coming together adds so much more flavor to a design process. And it has its own set of challenges, of course, but I feel like, you know, everything has its own set of challenges and it's worth going through to do it in that way. So I feel like it's been just nice to see that the school and the architecture department has wanted to bring in iTech as a part of the curriculum, because it's now, as I've looked out to so many different student projects over the years that I've been here in reviews, I've seen most everybody take such good care and intention of honoring the land and thinking about that critically in their design process, where it used to not even be evident at all. And so that to me brings me so much joy that at least that one ripple within this department has, you know, made somewhat of an impact in the many designers that will go through this program, and to see how that might carry through into the built environment in the next 50 years, like for the designers that have come out of here. And maybe it's a small impact, but I hope it's a really big one. This campus, Oak Savannah, has been a tremendous learning opportunity for all of us, for me even as an Indigenous person on my homelands. Like, I think this project brought me home and being able to build relationship with my homelands, to understand all of those things, to be learning from educators and other Indigenous community members about what it is to be native to here, and that being spread out to everyone else, and just to see how that brings people together in a beautiful learning way.
And that's it. That's what some of this work has been about: dismantling a system of colonial legacies in our practices and education, and shifting to a more inclusive, collaborative, and a relationship-centered one. More voices, more connections, more relationships to make this systematic change happen and inform a better future and pathway forward. And all of this includes everybody, whether you are Indigenous or non-Indigenous. And this hasn't been better demonstrated than in the Oak Savannah Project, And Emma tells us how this has all been playing out, particularly in the redesign of the iTech Center.
I coordinate the iTech Center Oak Savannah focus groups with Eric, and those are us checking in currently bi-weekly with interested students and staff that can make it. And those are more of like a convening to share current designs or meetings or ideas and get feedback. And those have been really great to like keep a continuity between conversations. So there's not just like kind of a big break and we're like, oh wait, what were we working on? Or who said this and what was this project? And I think that's really helpful for students because we have quite a few students that come to those. Because we also have like our own just like staff Oak Savannah iTech Center meetings. But I think Judy has always made sure that there's always room for the student and community voices because we want to know what they want to see on the site, what they visualize being helpful on the site, what makes them feel welcome, what they might need as a student or community member. And that's been a really big part of Judy's focus for this work since it began.
I mean, mostly when I think of these things, I just think how incredible it is that we can get so much done by collaborating, right? And I think the relationship that Indigenous Nation Studies has with the School of Architecture is just incredibly unique and reciprocal. You know, I think that's a really critical part, is that the architecture students are invested in learning about Indigenous ways of knowing and Indigenous, you know, like architecture and how to, you know, not build things that are racist and the importance of like the why, like they really want to know the why. And then on the other side, you know, students in Indigenous Nation Studies are learning like why architecture is important and why building spaces like this, you know, like is critical.
Speaking of designing spaces, Mandy brings experience to the table. As a master's student in library and information science at the University of Washington, Mandy has actively collaborated with students in the community to envision and develop decolonized library spaces and experience.
So, yeah, that's some of my most exciting work. I started looking at this with Julie Bruce, one of my classmates, in Judy's course, Contemporary Issues in Indian Country. And yeah, you get to pick kind of a contemporary issue and just investigate that and what does that look like and bring a presentation. So we started asking our immediate cohort, yeah, like what are the issues in a library? What does white supremacy look like in the library? And we started unpacking things like the Dewey Decimal System and the inherent racism and categorization practices and data privacy versus data sovereignty. And yeah, so we kind of came up with this whole research project. Julie wrote an amazing paper and I put mine into a presentation, and together we presented this work, which went to legislation actually and was part of bringing in the changes to the VSC. So it's really incredible, and that's not just my story. This is what Judy does for students. Students make a connection to whatever kind of work, right? That's a class that helps you connect your work and then bring in Indigenous voices and kind of start unpacking things in a good way. And so it kind of has led to being able to show this work to other people and then being able to bring in like the School of Architecture. And now we're actually making changes into different spaces like the Vernier Science Center and looking to the future to actually building an iTech Center, which will also have an Indigenous library or knowledge space centered in there as well.
As part of any collaborative work, there are many opportunities but also hurdles along the way. In a recent conversation, Emma shares with me the challenges that the team currently faces and are up against.
Our most common barrier is just time. And I think we're really good at making sure we focus on it being student and community led. And I also think that all of us have so many different roles that sometimes it's hard to just as a team dedicate time.
which is a normal challenge. I would say that that's the one thing internally that I noticed. And so sometimes it's like herding cats, which is just the reality of working with such an expansive team. Externally, I would say funding, the lovely bureaucracy of working within an academic institution, and then also time. Time is a really interesting thing in the Western world. And I think that iTech and collaboration with architecture push against timelines. Like, for example, right, we have 2 years to spend what we were awarded to do the renovative work here at the iTech Center. And that feels a little stressful. And I'm so thankful for the funding, and I know that we'll make it work. But I think that that very Western construct of timeline for specific funding and then it needs to be done, the work here will never be done. And that's so much a part of our teachings anyways. And it might be done on the building, but it will never be done on the Oak Savannah, which is the whole point of why we're putting the building here. And I think that us having to constantly educate is another barrier. And is it our job? Sure. Sometimes it's a really big lift and we don't all have the capacity for that. And so it might be glossed over because that's just what happens sometimes. And I feel like a lot of folks need to do work on their own to educate themselves. And so I always push for that. Like, yes, come ask your questions. There's no stupid questions. But also there's so many resources through our own websites, through things that we have produced individually on our own teams and then collectively, and there's going to be more of those, which will be helpful.
As these challenges show up in the process, some ways the team has tackled them honor setting boundaries, and like everything this project has been about, it's also a community effort on all partners to overcome these challenges together.
I think that as a team, prioritizing the needs of our students and communities helps us know where our boundaries lay. And sometimes you're in spaces where your boundaries like are flexible. And those are like in our community spaces, right? With our students, with Native community members in the Portland area. And then there's other spaces where your boundaries are not flexible. And I think that that's a important thing to stand like true to, because there's folks that we will bend over backwards to be there and share with and ask questions and engage in meaningful conversation. And then there's other folks that sometimes just aren't worth our time. and that's okay. And that's the reality of everything, really. But I think that this project itself pushes the boundaries of a lot of things that are done within academia. And that is super important, like us pushing back and saying, no, it needs to be student-led.
It's just a very like interesting forces that are coming together. It's like, you know, kind of balances the systems a bit, learning from each other. And because there's like timelines, you know, there's budgets, there's rules that we all have to be like, all right, how do we achieve what we want to achieve within these settings, and how do we sort of finagle it a bit, and how do we like, you know, and then it's just the people that you start are at the table legitimately, like the minds that are all actively there, and you know, it's not on just one person, it's like literally it's been a community event of like getting this whole thing going.
One thing that you haven't heard from, but it's really important conversation to have, is that the Oak Savannah and iTech Center does not stand alone. And what I mean by that is that it stands in connectivity to other Indigenous spaces at BSU, such as the Vernier Science Center, the Native American Student and Community Center, and the land on which BSU stands on. And I might also add that all of our storytellers have had an active role in helping to bring these spaces at BSU. And Athena tells us the importance of their presence in an urban setting and what it means to her, her Native community, and to everybody.
I feel like it gives the space for more Indigenous students and community members to be like, oh, that's happening there, and then they show up. And like for an elder of mine always says, if you build the fire, like, people will come. And so to me, that really means, you know, like, by building these spaces and by having them, then people come. Like, Indigenous people will come, non-Indigenous people will come, but people are going to be curious, you know, and especially Indigenous people. And I think that really, at the end of the day, like, our community has been traumatized for so long, and we're all healing some deep generational trauma. And just having more spaces that are visible and, like, evident as, like, the fire, you know, the fire, like, whoa, I need to go to that. It just, like, allows that space to exist to connect each of us together and to begin some of that healing practice that happens only when we're in community.
So let's round off our conversation today. We've gotten to hear many stories behind the Oak Savannah, the iTech Center, the land, the people, successes, challenges, and explore what is at the intersection of iTech and architecture. And trust me, this is only where the story begins. But before we end today's episode, I wanted to leave everyone with something special. With the iTech Center on its way, and as the Oak Savannah goes through an ongoing transformation, like many great ideas begin, there's a vision. At the end of each of my conversation with our storytellers, I asked them, what did they hope to see more of at the Oak Savannah and iTech Center? Currently, in a year, in 2 to 3 years, or more? And so I leave you here with everyone's visions.
It's a really emotional question. And to really think about that is, like, it brings me to tears. We've worked so hard. So to really envision it is, like, it's super joyous. You know, I see students working in these spaces and feeling like they belong. And I hope to see PSU investing more, you know, and seeing how important it is. I hope that the space is, like, really alive, and I hope that everyone that's been with the project is still a part of it somehow, whether it's in the stories that we're sharing about how we all contributed, or it's whether they're still connected, because, like Judy says, once you're here, you can never leave, and she really means it.
I think it's just really exciting to be able to have a... It feels to me like a heart, you know, of campus over there. And I love that we're, like, kind of allowed to just be a little rugged and less manicured. Because it kind of feels like how I feel in my, and how I was raised. Like, I never have fit in the box, really. And I don't know, it's a nice little representation of, like, being a little outside of the box over there on the campus. And and the Rainier Science Center too. Like, I think it's just such an exciting opportunity to be able to, like, globally connect. Like, that's a classroom that will be really, it has high tech capabilities of being able to record and share, because everything, there's, like, these nice cameras and stuff in those classrooms. And so, like, we'll be able to continue learning from people in Aotearoa, New Zealand, and, you know, from, like, your community. Like, we literally can connect to so many Indigenous people around the world, which is super exciting, because then it's, like, that's even a bigger ripple.
Realistically, we could work with the building we're in right now. Mm-hmm. We could make it work. But because the funding is there and we'll likely be able to support what we want to make happen with the School of Architecture, why not? Mm-hmm. Like, let's build a new space that does not have asbestos, that we can make our own and really make sure the gathering space is the way we want it to be for students and community, and partners, and make sure that we have a space for processing plants that we can harvest from the Oak Savannah and teach weaving. And then folks talk a lot about, like, a specific area for doing salmon bakes, because we do those with our wonderful partners, the Brunos, and they always have to bring their own, like, fire pit, because that's just where we're at right now. But, like, visualizing how cool it will be to have a permanent like fixture for Salmon Bakes is so cool. And the same thing for roasting camas, which is a traditional food. That's a bulb that you can cook in the ground traditionally. And so I think like seeing those spaces come to life with the creation of a new building that really captures what iTech is and how we want it to support students is what I hope to see.
I don't think in terms of eternity or forever or something gets built and it has to somehow last forever. But I do feel the vision and how it came together and the flexibility of those relationships being responsive to and also imagining, not just the victim of whatever's happening, but working intimately together. You know, we're taught it's like a dance in alignment with the stars. The stars aren't stationary. Stars, we look at the sky tonight, that isn't what they look like even, you know, 5 years ago. They're moving. So our understanding is that it's all in flux. We're moving, and to pay attention to that dance and follow that, and while you're creating it. And I think this site doesn't do it justice, but I think the Oak Savannah and the iTech Center will hopefully, given everybody's energy, we'll have that resiliency to move, you know, to move with the dance that's going on.
And this concludes the first episode of the Oak Savannah and iTech Center, the Voices at the Intersection of iTech and Architecture series. In the process of helping to weave all of these stories together, I had learned a lot, and I hope you did too, and perhaps consider the stories we've all been kindly gifted as a call to action, and to reflect and ask ourselves how we can be part of this movement. Also, we recognize that stories are told in many different ways. So we highly encourage you to check out the photos and mini stories around the Oak Savannah and iTech Center. I want to say a special thank you to Judy Bluehorse Kelton, Emma Johnson, Mandy Miller, Athena Rolatos, Clifton and Christine Bruno, and Emma Joel Cohen for sharing with us their oral stories and experiences at the Oak Savannah. I also want to say thank you to Sergio Pallaroni, Eric Giovanetti, Sam Barber, Lisa Abendroth, and Todd Ferry for their guidance for this series. But this is only where our story begins. Before we go, we invite everyone to join us for the part two of this series as we talk to architects, students, and staff in the School of Architecture and hear their side of the story. All of this coming soon.